Unpaved, Sean Salisbury here to bring an authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.
To me, Tom Brady is the GOAT because he's done more with less than any player at that position we've ever had.
What's up, everybody? Welcome into Unpaved. I am Adam Sager. He is, of course, Sean Salisbury. You can follow the show at Unpaved on Rumble. Follow Sean at Sean Unfiltered, myself at Adam G. Sager. And head over to YouTube, like and subscribe to our YouTube channel at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. You'll get all the notifications when we go live, when we put any videos up, all that kind of stuff. See what you miss in the show. Go back and watch old episodes. See what dumb shit we said a while back. Or maybe we said something smart. Who knows?
You know, all smart. You know, right? We don't say anything dumb. Okay. Well, high IQ show. Okay.
Some would argue with you on that, but you know what? It's our job to say whatever we want.
And only the people who argue with us all that have a less IQ than we do. So that's okay.
Right. We've got a ton to talk about today. Of course, the college football final rankings come out. The playoff is out. It is set. We had some surprises. Something that I thought was going to happen did happen, and we have a team very, very upset about it. We have a new trend in bowl season that we'll talk about, and then we have a player fighting with a coach on the field, and then we jump to the NFL where we got a lot of bad teams that were supposed to be good. We have a good team that now loses their quarterback, and then something happened at the end of the Browns game, Sean, that you're going to wrath on later in the show that I think people will want to see. So we've got a lot to talk about, but how you doing? How was your weekend? How are we feeling heading into this Monday?
I'm doing great. It was a hell of a weekend and a lot of great stuff to talk about and a lot of concerns, I think, moving forward, not only for teams and on Sunday to play, but the Saturday old school, you got to get out of your feels about bowl season. And it sucks if you're old school and loved it. And you just got to be able to adapt and adjust. And that's coming from an old school guy. So we need to hit that. And it's going to start with Notre Dame. So it just is. And you had mentioned through this. And I'm going to tell you, I'm trying. We have a big problem with all of us that, not just here anywhere, that the second we see something, we pounce without knowing. We'll get to the Stefanski stuff later when some guy pounced and you do know who calls the plays. I know exactly who calls the plays and who makes the decisions. It's the same thing here. The second, if you don't like Notre Dame, you're jumping for joy today. You are. If you think Notre Dame's got arrogance and privilege, you're right. But you're glad that they didn't make it. And they should join a conference that they don't have to share the money. And you know, by the way, Notre Dame only has 3 road games next year. You do know that. So they get to choose all this stuff. Let's put that aside. I'm trying my best on this to give both sides – to talk old school that thinks the bowl system's the same and it needs to be, you need to get off your ass and forget it. You need to shift your paradigms, man. It ain't happening. And that's coming from a guy who grew up in the bowl system and wanted them all, the Astro Bluebonnet Bowl, right to January 1st, from the time you woke up and were thumbing your nuts till the time that you went to bed that night. That's exactly what, in my mind, what we all want it to be. But it's shifted at different times throughout. It ain't ever going back to that. The bowls are now nothing more than to get a watch and a ring for teams that aren't very good, and even teams that aren't very good or that are going 6 games or 7 games have decided they're moving forward. It's no longer, we got to play in a bowl, not only for the fun and the pride and the competitiveness, but we got to play in a bowl game. Why? Because we want our young players to get a head start on spring ball. We get extra work. stuff that other teams don't get competitive. We can play a back. Yet, you know what's funny about that? Is that when, and I see people pissed at Notre Dame for being pissed. And I'm going, listen, this is coming from a USC Trojan. I understand the right. I try to be fair to both sides, not sit on the fence, but give you both sides. And you can friggin' decide what you think. Okay. But with the Notre Dame thing and the playing and why they're not going to a bowl game, we get guys opting out as players all the time. Can't go, man. Knee injury. Don't want to get hurt. I'm preparing for the NFL draft. I got to work out 16 hours a day, which we know is ridiculous, but that's what they say. Don't want to get hurt. And we've seen guys get hurt playing in a bowl game that affected their draft stuff. Well, with that, I get people all the time when you go against, say, man, you should be competing. I used to think that. And then I thought, I get it. What is the Astro Bluebonnet Bowl that's no longer there, or the Pop-Tart Bowl? No disrespect to Pop-Tarts. I love them. By the way, brown sugar's off the charts. Anyway, why in the world? What, I mean, we say, well, if you're going to be the fourth pick of the draft, why would you go? So we, and if you criticize that, because that guy's not competitive, and if I'm an NFL scout, he didn't play in the Sun Bowl in El Paso. Then they say it's his life and his money, right? And we know money's big now. It's pro sport, college sports is. Yet when Notre Dame decides to opt out of a bowl game and about a dozen other teams or where we're at, wherever we're at this morning, that we're mad at Notre Dame for not being competitive and being a good example. Now, the other side. So that exists. I'm telling you right now, I've got the point. I don't give a fuzzy rat's ass if Notre Dame goes to this bowl game, because neither do you, in truth, if you get through all your feels and how dare Notre Dame. For one time, let's all sit on the fence. You hate Notre Dame, you love Notre Dame, you're going to go one side or the other. And they have the one that hates them or doesn't love them going the other side. But let's be honest about this. Put yourself in their shoes. I'm trying to figure out, Sakes, what happened. Regardless, I personally think Miami and Notre Dame both belong in. Let me go to BYU, Alabama. Alabama's a good football team. This has nothing to do with, I see, as a Trojan, my guys are sitting home or going to a bowl game, the Alamo Bowl. Good, it's close to me. I get to go to it. It's great. If they'd opted out, I said, what a bummer, I don't get to go to it, but I get it. Get a head start on recruiting, a head start on NIL raising, a head start on spring practice. But for me, with all the things that have gone on, and I'm trying to see it right, what's the advantage? What's the advantage for Notre Dame to go? But go back to Alabama, BYU. How do we get to the point where Alabama, and this is where people are bitching about ESPN and SEC and the bias that's been going, and this kind of reared its head. First off, I loved what Vanderbilt's coach said. We don't belong in because we didn't take care of our business. That's one fact. If you're Notre Dame, lose one less game, we wouldn't be having the conversation. But they did. Now in comparisons to others, because we do that, head-to-head comparisons. With BYU, Alabama, we punished BYU for playing in a championship game, and they got their ass kicked by a team that can win the whole thing in Texas Tech. That ain't your dad's Texas Tech team, I assure you. But Alabama didn't get punished for playing in the extra game and taking a formal ass whooping by a team they beat once. So you can judge whether how that matters to you. Then the Miami-Notre Dame thing. And by the way, why would you now not? Because you're going to see it moving forward. If you are a team like Alabama going into that, so you didn't have the risk seg, even though it's segs, even though they got it, what would prevent a team going forward saying, we're in. We're sitting in the 6-hole. We're sitting in the 5-hole. We're not playing in the conference championship. Screw the ring. Screw the pride of a conference championship. We came here to win son of a bitch in championships. And I mean the big dog, the top 12, winning that championship, as opposed to that. My starting quarterback gets hurt. My other guy gets hurt. So we're not even going to be ready for the championship if that was the case. So what's going to prevent that moving forward? Nothing other than, boom, you want a chance to win the title? Maybe you move forward. So could we have punished them for not going, for saying, no, we're going to opt out of the SEC championship game. Ole Miss, you go. Oh, we don't want any part of that. We're in too. And so what are we going to do? Get down to the fourth team that belongs in? How are we going to regulate that? But back to the Notre Dame and Miami. Where was Notre Dame on Tuesday, Sakes? Wednesday morning when your ass woke up out of bed, where were they?
They were sitting at 9, I believe, was it?
Okay, so we're trying to change all this. Congratulations to JMU, to North Texas, and who am I leaving out in that of the non-big dogs?
JMU and Tulane are in.
Tulane. North
Texas is out losing to Tulane.
Right. JMU and Texas. North Texas had a chance. If they win, they go in that game.
Yeah, so JMU, Tulane and JMU.
Right. That's what I was going to say. JMU and obviously Tulane are in, right? Yeah. And that's another whole thing. Do you believe they're top 12? If you want to change it at the top, you pick the top 12 teams and let's go. If Texas and JMU played, who are you picking? I'm not saying Texas should be in. You get it? Although they can upset. I'm looking for 12 teams, Segs, that have a chance to win the championship. I'm not looking for 12 teams that two or three of them can win one game. Okay, that's my flag. And I'm telling you right now, James Madison ain't rolling through this to win it. Let I love the program. I'm not punishing them, but we need to do away with these automatic bids all the way across the board. Let me just real quick finish and we'll go because I got so much more to say.
Oh, yeah.
But I want the ban. But is with Miami and Notre Dame. So if Notre Dame's sitting in a nine hole, Miami was in the 12 slot, right? We knew they couldn't keep that slot, right, Segs? Is that where they were on Tuesday? What did either one – did either one of them have a common opponent in this in this bowl, in their game?
No.
Okay, so my point is, and I think the Notre Dame athletic director said, explain to me why we do the all this leading up, other than it's made-for-TV bullshit to get you to keep watching – leading up to Sunday's final one. What between Miami and Notre Dame? I think Miami should be in, but I'm not so sure Notre Dame shouldn't either. What did they do, those two, to flip-flop? How did one end up out and the other move? How? What did they do between Tuesday and Sunday? Just focus on those two teams and the committee. What it tells you is the committee has got so much bullshit coming out of that meeting room. They teased you and teased you and teased you for the look and the optics, and then they pulled the rug right out. Because if you're Notre Dame, I understand they should be in a conference. That's on them. Now, they've tried in the past to get in, but because of the religion part of it, yet BYU's in now because BYU's just stated, we're not playing on Sundays because they're LDS. They don't do that. They obey the Sabbath. They don't do it. Now we're past that where you can adjust if you're Notre Dame. Maybe it's an excuse. I'm not defending Notre Dame. I'm just giving you both sides. What happened? You tell me. You're on the committee. I want to know what you guys did. Notre Dame and Miami, why did it flip? Neither one of them played between Tuesday and Sunday.
I mean, if
you you're a Notre Dame player, are you not picking? I'm automatically in.
Oh, well, yes, and Notre Dame thought that. I mean, and their AD.
So what changed between those two?
If you want the Hunter Yurchek answer, it is BYU lost handily in their conference championship game, which put Miami moving up a slot next to Notre Dame, and then they compared those two teams. And that's what he had been saying for weeks. He said, they're not next to each other, so we're not comparing them yet. Now, I think it's stupid. I had been saying for weeks that Miami should have been ranked ahead of Notre Dame in the first place, but this is where the committee and their leader of it was the guy from Baylor, then it was Yurchek from Arkansas, who just are dumb.
But here's my point, though. Okay. So you should be comparing them even if they're two slots apart. They don't need to be shoulder to shoulder. My point is, so what the hell did BYU have to do with Miami? I'm talking about with those two just in where they're slotted. What did BYU? So BYU got their ass kicked by Texas Tech. And maybe they did. Am I wrong here? Did Miami play Texas Tech this year?
Miami played Texas Tech.
No. And did Notre Dame play Texas Tech this year?
No.
Oh, okay. So explain to me again, with all these intelligent, genius athletic directors and committee members, what happened between Tuesday and Sunday that said Notre Dame should have been ranked ahead of Miami anywhere, but if they were and the committee had decided that all year long when we first started this, and then we get to that point, did either one of them lose between Tuesday and Sunday? Did either one of them play on Saturday or Friday night?
No.
So why? What it tells you is that all it is a handful of weeks of optics so ESPN can control your narrative. I'm not saying their fault, but we know they – and then to complain that Notre Dame's not in, well, they control the college football. They control all the money. They control it all. So, Segs, there's so much about it, but I'm just trying to – just get down to brass tacks. What did Miami and Notre Dame do to flip? Even if you and I both thought Miami should have been ahead of Notre Dame because they beat them, and what does BYU have to do with Miami and Notre Dame being the fact they got their ass kicked? So what? I'm talking about the two slots that Notre Dame and Miami were in. What changed between Tuesday and Sunday? And if you're a Notre Dame 17-year-old, aren't you saying, Miami's not playing, so we can't get jumped? And now going forward, And unless you're on the Kirby Smart train, which I get, and you and I are old school, like say, I want to play all the time and I'm going to play in the conference championship. Why would you, if you were Ole Miss, if you would have got in, your coach is gone. Just giving you an example, coach is gone. Part of your staff's gone. It's going to be tough. Maybe Pete will have him in there and they'll go win. But if let's just say they were the conference champs, right? Say, or they went to the conference championship for the hell of it. Why would you risk it and play? Why would you risk it and play?
I mean, if you think you're in because you only have one loss. The whole system's screwed.
Yeah. What I don't want to hear, Sags, to be honest with you, I do not want to hear people bitch that, they're not going to play in a bowl game. The bowl game that you popped up, well, your ass ain't going to watch anyway, so save it. And I've had to shift my paradigms because I was always, you get elected, it's an honor and a pleasure to go play. It's no longer that way. It's not an honor and a pleasure to go play for a legacy. Why? Because if somebody offers you $8 million or $100 million, you're leaving after you said, this is my favorite place to be. Save all the loyalty bullshit, whether you're Notre Dame or the people that hate Notre Dame or anybody else. Now, does it look like they took their ball and went home? Yes, and they did, and so did a bunch of others, and it ain't going to stop there going into next year. You're going to get teams that don't belong in a bowl game that are going to be playing in bowl games. We're going to end up doing away with the system, so those of us old school just got to get used to, man, this is the change, and I'm all for it. I just don't get, you know, the whole thing. And if Notre Dame wants to protect their players and doesn't want to play in a game that doesn't mean shit to them, they don't want the extra little money, fine. They get plenty of money during the season because why? They're not in a conference. They ain't sharing it with you or me or anybody else. So you can take it either side you want, hate Notre Dame or not. I'm trying to give you both. I can just – the whole thing for me is why wasn't Notre Dame behind Miami in the first place?
Yeah. And it had been a discussion we'd been having for a couple weeks now when it comes to these two teams.
At least a month, Sags.
Yes,
month for us.
And I said Friday when we, you know, right at the end of the show, we asked the question, will Miami be in the playoff ahead of Notre Dame if it comes to it? And I said yes. Maybe it was because I had been saying it all along that they should be. So I just thought they were going to do it. And again, this is sports. The way things are going right now in sports, everything you need eyeballs. This is bringing more eyeballs than just doing it the normal way the whole time. And you could say what you want about it.
Yeah.
I mean, and if you really want to get into it, the team who has the major bitch is BYU. Because if you're going to go by, everybody keeps spouting off all these metrics, Texas's metrics, Notre Dame's metrics, Miami's metrics, Miami beat Notre Dame. BYU had the best metrics of all, and their only two losses were to the number four team in the country twice. And yes, they got their ass kicked twice, but it's still the number four team in the country.
Segs, if BYU sits this out, they are in the 12.
Right.
Or they should be. Because the Texas Tech loss was a month ago or whenever it was. And the metrics by BYU and who they played, no doubt. Well, BYU, unfortunately for the committee or the rest of us, if we want to have that argument, doesn't pass their big, you know, Lavelle Edwards isn't there anymore. Okay. Right. God rest his soul. So, Segs, for me, it's so moving forward. And please, folks, Segs, you're going to watch the Pop-Tart Bowl if BYU played Notre Dame? If, in fact, it was just in passing, it was a pretty good matchup. But in truth, are you bummed and whining over the fact that you're not going to see it? And by the way, who made the decision for Notre Dame to go? Everybody wants to say it's about the friggin' kids, right?
Yeah.
Supposed to be. They're getting NIL. They can transfer whenever they want. They can do whatever they want. Let me ask you, who voted to not to go to the bowl game?
The players.
Oh, well, you're taking away these kids' opportunity to go play another game. They don't give a shit. They're not playing another game because they don't want to. Because they feel snubbed. And I get it. Is it got a sense of you crybabies? Sure. Are we saying that about the other 10 teams that didn't go, that didn't have a chance to get into the playoff?
No. I don't know. So I
hate
see
Notre Dame all you want, but the committees, the whole thing is committee and the control that you know who has to dictate people. And I'm telling you, I talked about it. I know through the grapevine, through one person to another, and it's not hearsay. People call schools and their people that are in decision-making to politic to get a vote for their place.
Oh, yeah.
This is nothing more than lobbyists who are running college football when it comes to this.
Listen to post-game interviews every time. That's all it is. It's just politicking every single time. And now we have Notre Dame pissed off at the ACC because they politicked against them, yet Notre Dame was sitting there politicking against Miami for weeks. So it's just, it's stupid. It's why the committee is dumb. I mean, put 12 football minds that have nothing to do with ESPN, that have nothing to do with any conferences. Yeah, I don't care how many, if it's 10, if it's five, I don't care. Just, I want football people. If it's,
I want the 12 best. They got a chance to win. I want the 12 best. Congrats to those who made it. God bless.
That's fine. Yes. And when it comes to the Tulane and James Madison argument, understand it. Completely get it. Agree with it. But we knew this coming into the season.
No doubt. The rules say it.
Five conference champions were getting in. And if you want to be pissed at somebody, be pissed at the ACC for sucking balls. Because if they didn't suck, then we could, you know, have that fifth team be Miami. And yeah, you can bitch about the tiebreakers and whatnot, but tiebreakers in all sports are kind of crazy. Instead of just simplifying it, we make it much more trouble than it is. So it's just,
the ACC sucked ass. Okay.
Yes.
Number one. And if there's not good players and good teams, but that's a big part of the problem. But I personally want the 12 best teams. Well, the other team's not going to get a chance. Well, go undefeated, start scheduling Alabama, Georgia, and Southern Cal in your three in three games. And if you're a group of five or somebody else, get in. I'm not dogging the group five. God bless them. They earned it under the rules. But we don't have the 12 best teams in the country in this playoff. And you and I both know it. So I thought that was the object. Not one that can upset a team, because James Madison and Tulane can. I watched Tulane kick my team's ass. When I say that, they beat him by a few, but they hung 40-plus on him a couple years ago. So they're good. But they're not going – neither one of those teams is rolling through four games to win the national title. I'm sorry to tell you.
Yeah.
Just the attrition. Yeah. If a star on JMU, star quarterback, star running back, star edge rusher, get hurt on either one of those teams, hard for them to overcome. If Georgia's starting running back gets hurt, guess what? They got another dude who 2 years from now is going to be a first-round draft pick and may rush for 200 yards in the championship game anyway. So all this be damned. And the truth of the matter is, I just don't understand from Tuesday to Sunday what changed. And you're right about BYU. I just am flabbergasted that and say that this righteous, you know, the righteous part, we're all self-righteous. I'm not a Notre Dame, you know, I didn't go there. I took a recruiting trip. But you got to present both sides, because in truth, this is just the beginning. College football changed when they denied this as a team. But the players don't want to go. So why do you care?
Right. Again, I mean, if you're Notre Dame, beat Miami. I mean, beat the team that's in front of you. You can't. I mean, I get they did it last second and it looks bad and all this stuff. But in the end, I keep seeing all these resumes and stuff. And it's like Notre Dame's two losses are against this and this. But they never mentioned the fact that the team that jumped them was a team they lost to during the season. I don't care if it was week one, two.
And that's valid as hell, Sakes.
Yes.
That's valid. So, take care of your own business before you have to take care of somebody else's business. But getting back to that, you watched Georgia and Alabama, Segs. So did I.
Yeah.
And you know how I listen, buddies, and I think it's a hell of a program. What part of you in that game, or the way they played as of late, saw that it was a playoff team?
None.
I understand you're going to say, well, they're playing. How many losses they got, Segs?
Three.
How many teams are in this playoff? Three teams. How many of them have three losses in the, out of the 12?
Just them.
Okay. So are you going to tell me SEC, we know who controls it. Are you going to tell me there was zero bias in the way you chose? Because the optics, if you just looked at the naked eye, and I understand they beat them earlier, but I kind of like a hot team going in. And I'm not saying Alabama should or should. This is back to Notre Dame, Miami, and how they did it, and how you, between Tuesday and Sunday, you didn't do anything, and yet you still jumped them. Well, we were saving them. You were saving them because you want the optics to change. And it almost feels like it's a, They were digging into Notre Dame for not being in a conference, right?
It did feel like it.
Yep. So there you go. I just, me Segs, this is, we'll have a hell of a playoff. I'm going to watch them all. But guess what? I can't sit up here high and mighty, and I'm old school. Everybody playing the bowl game, players play. I've changed. I've shifted with all the money and all the stuff that's involved. Notre Dame doesn't want to go to the Pop-Tart Bowl. Can't blame them one bit. And if it means you took your ball home, make sure that ball stays pumped up, because you'll get a chance to do it again next year. But remember, they got three away games next year. What does that mean? Nine at home? They're not in a conference. They get to control whatever they want. That's the argument for the other side. But I don't blame them for not playing, and that's not like me, Sig. You know me, brother. I want to play. But if it's not going to benefit you and you don't care about a few extra bucks, why the hell would it matter?
Right. Yeah. I mean, we'll continue this conversation throughout the week because there will be more and more to come out and, you know, different sides, and we'll look at the bracket tomorrow and kind of, you know, talk about what we think about the bracket before we switch here to the NFL. It just feels like college football changed yesterday when these brackets came out.
Team-wise, it did.
Yes. And we're going to see how teams adjust moving forward year after year after year. Because remember, and it's already started, we are getting ready to, and I think they technically can't do it till like January 2nd or 3rd, but the transfers are starting. And this is when things get chaotic in college football. There will be thousands of transfers in college football coming out over the next month or so. And it's
that's not hyperbolic.
Wild,
that's fact.
Wild West when it comes to transfers. So we'll follow it all as we go through here this holiday season, the bowl season, the college football playoff season, and we'll see how the game continues to change. But let's make the jump to Sundays. So the NFL. Sean, we got two teams that everybody thought would be fighting for one of the spots in the AFC in the Super Bowl. It's the Ravens with Lamar Jackson lose again to the Pittsburgh Steelers 27-22. And then you have the Kansas City Chiefs lose to the Texans 20-10 last night on Sunday Night Football. Both these, when you just look at them, they look like bad teams. So, I mean, and that's not something we've said in years about Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, or John Harbaugh, Lamar Jackson and the Ravens. Normally they are beating each other up come January for a chance to get to the AFC championship to then normally the Chiefs win and go to the Super Bowl, but they're in there fighting along with the Buffalo Bills and so on. So Lamar Jackson and the Ravens lose again. What was your initial thought seeing this, knowing that, you know, we had kind of started to write off the Steelers? You know, there was some chaos. There's talk about Mike Tomlin leaving, all this stuff going on. And then they go out and beat their division rival to take the lead in the division back that they had kind of lost. And now they look like the team moving forward that will represent the AFC North in the playoffs.
Yeah, maybe represent them. I still don't trust the Steelers are long for January.
No, not at all.
I just don't.
They're a bad team, too.
Right. Segs, you go through three. One is all the talk about Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin still always gets his teams ready to get to this point. I don't know if they can go on and win. It's been a while since he's had a Super Bowl. I've said it before, I'll keep saying it. I don't care what all the banner is about Mike Tomlin. He wins. Now, doesn't have as many Super Bowls, but if you really want to start counting, there's plenty of coaches that are still coaches that don't have any Super Bowls that keep getting jobs. Right. Mike Tomlin knows how to coach. That's one. Two is the Pittsburgh Steelers played better yesterday and won a game when their playoff lives, or the division title and the division lead is fighting for it. They looked like they were ramped up to go. Perfect. Now show it to me 3 weeks in a row. That's one. The Baltimore Ravens. And when people say, well, they've been hurt. Look, you see how many people Kansas City Chiefs have hurt too? Guys trying to protect the quarterback. I could go through it all. Save that. I've seen it. I've seen it in baseball. I saw it with the Houston Astros this year. I see it all the time about, well, they're hurt. Right. It's called football. Why, you better scout for backups and know how to go in and do their damn job. So I don't want to hear it about Baltimore. Baltimore looked a bit disinterested to me.
They did.
Which is weird. So the excuses. And listen, both Pittsburgh and Baltimore should have zero disinterest no matter where they are. Hell, for a while, the Cincinnati Bengals, even though they just don't have enough defensively, heck, I'm thinking if they were decent defensively, if Burrow plays all season, they're the best team in the damn AFC North. I'm telling you right friggin' now.
Maybe in the AFC.
Yeah, right. You watched how that guy, just like that with minimal work, dissects. Phenomenal. We saw him and Josh Allen. Awesome. Right, phenomenal. And they had a chance to win on the road. Phenomenal. Watching he and Josh Allen go back and forth is a great watch. I digress. But so Baltimore and Pittsburgh have zero excuse. Well, they're tired and they're beat up. No, neither one of you. First of all, Pittsburgh, you ain't sniffed a Super Bowl in a long time. In Baltimore, you've never won one. So your motor should be revving up all day, every day, kicking ass. So is the speech old? Is Baltimore just kind of disinterested? Now, are they going to – I don't know what's going to happen the last month of the season, but I know this. Neither one of those teams you saw, Baltimore or Pittsburgh, are ready to play February football right now. Now to Kansas City. I'm going to just tell you the cold, hard facts. They're slow in a lot of places. They're a step behind. They're a step behind at blocking people. They're a step behind in the run game. Hell, the quarterback missed throws, the throw to Kelce gun. He missed throws that he doesn't normally miss. He was at 1.8 or 9 or 10 in a row missed. Now, had some drops, but a ball here, I don't know, while Kelce was trying to bring it in, and he dropped some balls too. They've gotten slower. They've gotten older. They've gotten less explosive offensively, even though they've got Rice laid the ball on the ground, right? Segs, you saw that. Where are they getting the ball in space? It's real simple. The Kansas City Chiefs this year, now, who knows? Maybe this is the motivation team. I'm not saying they have an excuse, but I can understand the fatigue for that team that's playing in AFC championship games year after year after year. So do we give them a hall pass? No, but I get it. But it's not for lack of effort, Segs. I'm going to tell you what it is. Can't say the Chiefs are just – they're good for 4 weeks. They're not 17 games right. good right now. They're just not. The quarterback's not as sharp as he's been. The tight ends – this may be it for him. He's a step or two slow now.
Yes.
He's not, put it this way, the three best players on their team, while still maybe the two of them, you saw Chris Jones, when he ramps it up, you saw what happened. I'm not even sure he's their best player on defense. Karlofta, they got some good ones, but he's in the category. We know Mahomes is Mahomes, and he'll get it right. But as a whole, they looked old, slow, and bad execution. So of the three, they get more hall pass because they live there. But guess what they're not doing? Playing in January, late January this year. And if they did, they'd get their ass kicked because they're not even a top five team in the AFC.
Looking at it right now, the way things stand in the playoffs, as I pull it up in the AFC, excuse me, we have the Denver Broncos and the New England Patriots, both 11-2. They're the top two seeds. They will be the top two seeds, assuming they don't just lose out the rest of the way, which I don't think either team will. Then you have the Jacksonville Jaguars now leading the AFC South at 9-4 with their win over the Colts, who we'll talk about in a second. You have the Steelers in at the four spot right now at 7-6, leaders of the AFC North. Then you have the Buffalo Bills at 9-4. You have the Chargers at 8-4. And now you have the newcomer Houston Texans, who beat the Chiefs last night. They're at 8-5, still charging possibly to take over that division from the Jags, who they've split this season with. But even watching the Houston Texans last night, you can't walk out of there, as we've said all season, Super Bowl defense. That offense isn't good. And I mean, C.J. Stroud isn't good. So, I mean, they've got stuff to figure out that if they think they can walk into the playoffs and compete with the Denver Broncos or New England Patriots or even Buffalo Bills, that offense has got to take some sort of step forward in these last few weeks of the season. But watching the first 12, 11, 13 games, I don't see how they do it because they've been this team all season.
All I'm asking the Texans, any of us to do, is you're going to have to ramp it up. Just don't screw it up offensively. Now, I wouldn't tell my quarterback that from a media standpoint, because in truth, they had every reason offensively for a long period of time. At one point in time, Stroud had like 0 of 8 or 0 of 9, and Mahomes, his longest straight in. I mean, between the two of them, there was a time when they were going, like, what the hell's going on? What Stroud did do is made some phenomenal plays at the right time last night, just not the whole time, Segs. I'll give him credit for that. But they're not explosive right now. Now, I'm going to tell you, their most explosive player right now, hell, Woody Marks, when he's healthy, I'm telling you right now, they have found a new back, whether go forward with Mixon next season, I don't know. But their bell cow back in and out and just inside, outside, and catching the football is him. The Texans defense is, if you're faint of heart, you don't want to play them because they are wholeheartedly keeping you in every game. Just don't screw it up. Now, there's some potential with the Texans, but how long are we going to keep saying that? I watched them hand it off on first down every time. When they started mixing play action, there were some free runners to get them open. They couldn't block me and you yesterday, and they're getting run right by and in his face.
That's their problem.
Right. They're not physical enough offensively to be in a fist fight. But what happens is that fist fight goes on, you lay the ball on the ground, and they get a short field because of their defense. There is no defense. I don't know what stats say. Physical and finesse better in this league right now than the Houston Texans. Now, the Texans offense faced Spags, and Spags had a great plan for them. The Texans offensive line and protections could not handle extra bodies. They were fortunate to get a touchdown and a couple big plays and CJ making throws at the right time. The offense is not near Super Bowl ready. The defense is about as Super Bowl ready as you can be right now, because you play them, you turn it over, you'll get beat even when their offense isn't going well. And the Colts are done with no Daniel Jones. I'm just telling you, I don't know what the playoffs are going to look like, but they lost. That's going to be a major, major issue for them. And here the Jaguars are hanging around and doing it. The Texans are probably the best team in the league still, in the division, even though their record doesn't say best team. But they can't have a fault along the way, because then it's just too much to make up after their slow-ass start.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see down the stretch because, as I mentioned, Daniel Jones tore his Achilles. So that, as we both think, will eliminate the Colts from the playoffs, and they'll continue to lose down the stretch with Riley Leonard at quarterback. But you saw the Jags just completely dismantle the Colts defense yesterday, who that defense has been playing pretty well all season long. And if that offense can click a little bit, and I was watching that game, and the guy they kept bringing up is kind of why things have kind of taken off offensively is when they acquired Jacoby Myers. And he's just helped stabilize the offense and give Trevor Lawrence that guy that when he needs a play, he can go to Jacoby Myers. And it's kind of lifted them up a little bit, and they're playing some pretty damn good football.
They are, sakes.
Nobody in this world, however many people in this world, nobody said
320 million on the world. Yeah. I don't know. The United States, 300 million or something.
320 million, whatever it is. Nobody had the AFC South having a 9-4, an 8-5, and an 8-5 team. We all thought they'd be about 500, maybe the Texans at like 8-5, maybe 9-4 if they're playing really, really well. But man, this division's been really good, and I'm not counting out the Jags yet because they're starting to show some signs that the Texans aren't on offense.
Right. Agreed. Segs, you know what's interesting too is where did Jacoby Myers come from, Segs?
The Raiders.
And my Raiders suck and couldn't make a big play not named Brock Bowers if their life depended on it. I digress. Right. I need to get that in for my silver and black team. Yeah, Segs, the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know I'm trying not to trust them because every time I do, they get beat at the wrong time. Right. You know that.
Yes.
But they're showing a little some signs of toughness, some signs of big plays. The whole thing rides on that guy on the screen right there, 16. Mm-hmm. They're tough enough. They've got some players. If 16 makes good decisions going forward, they will win the division because they got a head start. Now, if C.J. Stroud starts to play better because he is the best quarterback in the division and their offense matches their defense, then the Texans will find a way to get this done. The Texans have won 5 in a row, and it started when Davis Mills – I'm not saying he replaced, I'm just saying when it started. Hanging in there when you were down like 19 in a game – mm-hmm. And you came back and won. I think it was against this very Jacksonville team, wasn't it? It was the Colts. It was Jacksonville, wasn't it?
Jacksonville.
Weren't they down? Yeah. They're down almost 3 touchdowns, 3 scores for sure. And they come back. And since then, they've been hell on wheels. But their offense has got to play better. Right now, Jacksonville is the most complete team in the division and healthier. Both of these teams now healthier than the Colts. And when you lose your starting quarterback, I don't like the backup option right now, Segs. I just don't. That's just me right now because the accuracy issues, it's going to be a bummer for the Colts. They're going to have some out-of-body experiences.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm sitting here writing these remaining schedules down for each team, and the Texans have the Cardinals, the Raiders, the Chargers, and the Colts. And then you look at the Jags.
They'll be favored in 3 of the 4 for sure.
Yes. And then look at the Jags, they have the Jets, the Broncos, the Colts, and the Titans. They'll be favored in 3 of the 4 there.
They should be 3-1 for sure.
So if each team goes 3-1, I think that's good enough.
That's 11 wins. They're getting in.
Texans in as wild card, and then that means the Jags win the division at an incredible 12-5, which I didn't see coming from the Jags, but I digress. It's been interesting in this AFC South. We'll continue to follow that. Real quick before we get to the Wrath of Sean. Bears lose to the Packers in a close game. It was a tale of two halves in this game. If the Bears played anywhere like they did in the second half and the first half, they win that game probably handedly because the first half was so, so, so bad. And I do a post-game show for the Bears. I put it on their coaches. I put it on Dennis Allen, and I put it on Ben Johnson. Neither one made an adjustment in the first half ever. I mean, Ben Johnson came out. He threw, wasn't scoring. And then finally, the drive where he actually ran the ball, I think 9 times, it was like a 13-play drive, they got points. It was a field goal. And then when did they score in the second half? When they started running the ball. And it's something that Ben Johnson's done every, it feels like every single week, where he comes out and tries to get Caleb going, and Caleb's off to start games. And then they figure out, okay, we got to run the ball, and then they come back and win. Well, this week they got down, just gave up too many big plays. They lost Kyler Gordon right before the game to another injury, and Dennis Allen felt like he could take his defensive backs and match up against the speedy Green Bay Packers wide receivers, and they couldn't. And it took too long for him to adjust, and that's what cost the Bears this game. Everybody can point to the interception at the end as, you know, Caleb did miss an open commit early, and then he throws the interception. But I thought overall it was a good game, especially in the second half, and I think both these teams showed that they're dangerous getting into the playoffs, both of them.
Yeah, Segs, you know, it's interesting. You know, I'm a big old fan of Ben Johnson. He gets a little too cute at times. Mm-hmm. He just does. He buys into how we all talk about him at times, meaning, man, this guy's a genius and turn you sideways. The Bears are a really interesting team, and so is Caleb. I think he's getting better, but the problem is, Segs, you saw him. He misses too many easy ones early. I mean, yes. If he plays, when he gets going, if I could see him do that for 3.5 quarters as opposed to start, you know, at one point he's 14 to 28 or 14 to 29. Yeah. It's just that he's missing stuff, yet you see him on the edge with his feet, makes a play, makes a spectacular play going one way and makes a great throw. He has got to find a way, and so does Ben, whether it's the rest of this year or next year, of bringing the spectacular close to the boring. I know he's spectacular. The boring eludes him at times. That's one. They gave up some big plays at the Packers with that speed in the secondary. And when you do, regardless of how Jordan's playing, Jordan Love's going to hit some plays. Pretty damn good deep ball thrower. And there was times when their physicality on the offensive line to push and the way that they were running it with the big fella in the backfield, it was, Segs, we're coming down to it. It turned out to be a great game. A couple other things that stood out. Some open ones missed, running option route. He sits and Caleb's throwing it like he's trying to run away, and so it falls onto the ground. I didn't like some of the decisions in certain situations, and I've never understood whether it's quarterback, play caller, fourth down and a yard or two. I'm going to do everything that allows me, and I know the game was running down, but you still had, I think, 2 timeouts left.
Yes, you did, yeah.
You still had 2, and you were within striking distance of throwing the ball into the end zone.
Yes.
So I don't understand. I've never – you'll see it a lot of times, Segs. It's 4th and a yard, and the quarterback throws a fade pinned up against the sidelines that lands out of bounds. I've never understood the simplicity of all hitch. Segs, I'm willing at this stage, and I'm not bullshitting you, is to get in that huddle and say 70 protection. Take care of it. Back, stay in. Unless if it's sewn up, chip and get out. Find me 3 yards and sit down.
Mm-hmm.
Other 4 guys, just like we did in the schoolyard, get to the sticks beyond them and get your ass open. I don't care if it's
right.
You guys do what you got to do to get open because we're in that situation now. And then he throws a ball running to his left, a drop shot that was underthrown in the back of the end zone. And I know at that stage you're just trying to make some. Hell, I almost looked at the back and the flat, Segs. If he throws it now just for the catch and tackle, yes, if he's on time and boom, you're looking low to high. Because that's what you should be doing. You don't have to pass up an open short guy to get to a guy that may be open down the field, especially on 4th and 1 when you've got a chance to throw it in the end zone and win. Use a timeout and let's take 2 shots at the end zone or whatever and go. Shows up quick. Set your feet and rip him one much more higher percentage. Because in the NFL, a yard, a half a yard, that's a window.
Yeah.
Coffee can's a window. In college, it's bigger. In high school, it's bigger. But when you get a coffee can size window, you got to put it in there. I would have come out, boom, guy gets a tad bit of separation, throw it to him, catch, tackle, timeout, give me a couple shots at the end zone. I just don't understand the thinking between the ears. I wouldn't even say in that situation, I'm being honest to God here. I understand in the 3rd quarter you take that shot.
Yeah.
I'm not even calling a play. It's like on the Saturday game. Backed up, 4th down, they're down 2 scores, and they run a wide field flat route that you take. You can't make the throw. I want people coming to me so
right.
I can get a completion and make it easier. I've never understood the thought process. I wouldn't give the quarterback a deep option. everything would be beyond the sticks and move and find me a piece of space. But when you give a quarterback the option, you know what they're thinking, Sakes? Make the big play.
Yep.
Let the big play happen when it happens. Don't force something. Don't pass up the open guy. Even if it was a little bit, pro quarterbacks are supposed to be able to make that throw in the left flat, and they didn't. And that was closer to him than the Alabama throw against Georgia,
yeah,
which was ended up being about a 25-yard throw to the flat because of how far it was and how wide he was. So it was a hell of a game. You're going to see both these teams, obviously, in the playoffs, battling now still for winning the division. But the Packers also showed why they've grown some nuts, why LaFleur knows how to win in this month, and why they'll get after you defensively. It was an impressive win and one that they needed in a very, very cold environment.
Yeah, it was extremely cold. You could tell when Kyle Manunga took on one of the linebackers. I'm forgetting which one it was. And
best tackling I've seen by the secondary on any secondary in a long. Somebody is coaching up how to tackle on these teams because they were knocking your dick in the dirt.
Right. They were. And when Manunga hit, I don't know if it was Ingabar or who it was, but I mean, the Packers helmet almost basically kind of exploded. You saw pieces just fly. And Manunga hits him and gets stopped immediately and stays on his feet somehow after that hit and continues on. I mean, some of these guys, I just don't understand. It's like they don't have brains in there that have a concussion to happen. You know what I mean? So it's just like they hit and they just keep going. It's like, you should be able to do that as a human. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And football is not a physical sport. It's a violent one.
Yeah,
and you saw a bunch of legal violence. I'm talking about legal hits, legal violence. That's the way we play it. No argument here. I love it. Just a side note, I got to keep Jaden Daniels away from everybody on the planet, dude. I just do. Because, I mean, every time and then two times again yesterday, he takes on three or four players running the football. It's like, dude, learn to get down. It's going to keep you out of this friggin' league. And then he throws a pick. And then he runs after and got his ass curb stomped, and then he gets hurt from that. I understand you got to go make a play and a tackle, but use your speed to get around and quit taking these people on, or Washington's going to – he will not last in this league. He is so slight but so talented. You don't need to show us your toughness. And once again, fragility is starting to kick in and fragile with him, which is not a good thing.
He's RG3 all over again. I mean, that's and it's the same team. I almost said same uniform, but it's a little different because they've now changed their name. But yeah, same colors.
I just had to get that in there. And, I want this kid to play. Yeah,
it's definitely something that we'll continue to watch and see if he can stay on the field healthy for an entire year, because now teams know it. So if he does throw an interception, you're going for him, not to hurt him, but to hit him. And there's a chance, good chance, he will get hurt. Moving on, something you said about the Bears there. The 4th-and-1, the play decision, the play call decision from Ben Johnson. Well, we had another game with a young quarterback named Shedeur Sanders, who, by the way, today was named the starter for the rest of the season by Kevin Stefanski. But Kevin Stefanski, they score the touchdown. They're down 2 points. They need a 2-point conversion. Your young quarterback in Shedeur Sanders has played a pretty damn good game all game long. You take them out of the game and you run a play for the 2-point conversion that I'll let you take from here with your Wrath of Sean, but it was mind boggling. Sean, let it rip with the Wrath of Sean.
Yeah, Segs. Listen, man, first off, coaching's hard. Making decisions is hard, but that's why you get paid. So it's not that any of us sitting at home can do better, but I can tell you this, I wouldn't make this call with this personnel grouping. Kevin Stefanski, it felt personal. And I'm not saying it was. It just felt it watching this. And let's back up here. Shedeur Sanders, and you see the 2-point play, down 2, game on the line. Their second 2-point play of the game, they ran another one earlier, down 14, and decided to go for 2 points and started chasing the points then. But it's this one that baffled me. Shedeur Sanders played great football yesterday. He missed some early on. He was under 50%, then got going. Threw three, ran one, got him going. He was greatly responsible for pushing them back into this game under duress. Was calm, was the most calm I've seen him in his, three starts or whatever it's been now, four starts, whatever it's been. And he should be starting the rest of the year. He earned it. Played damn good football. Put them in a position to go to overtime or at least have the chance. Now, you say, Sean, I had some guy on Twitter when I put it up there, he goes, you do know, Sean, you're aware that Kevin Stefanski doesn't call the plays. I know Tommy Reese, offensive coordinator, but I had to reply back, and this is what I was saying at the beginning of the show. You are aware that no situational football ever gets run, whether the head coach is calling the play or it's the coordinator, ever gets run. You'll never run a two-point conversion. Tommy Reese says, two-point conversion, give me the Wildcat, get in there. You will always approve that with the head coach. So whether it was Stefanski who made the call, even though he said he did and takes full responsibility, or approved it, he approved this slop. Now, would I have a problem if the normal personnel was in and you ran the Philadelphia Eagles play, give it to the back because it's set up, you worked on it, it was set up perfectly, and you hit the guy, Nick Foles, in the end zone, in the Super Bowl? Oh, no, but that didn't happen. I also had a guy on X say, well, it was a perfect call. It was a great call, but it wasn't executed. Well, no shit. That's why it didn't work, and it's not the right call. Now, I want to ask you, in a game situation like this, how many teams, and I know he's not Mahomes, and I know he's not Josh Allen, but I know he was having a game that said momentum and the way he's feeling it, put the ball in the quarterback's hands. Why do I want a guy who doesn't know how to read coverage, a running back, or a receiver in a Wildcat, or a tight end when he gets under center? Why would I want to have them have to read coverage and make a decision when they've never made reads or something down there? So you don't know where to throw. That's one. At least Shedeur Sanders knows how to execute it. Whether it would have been complete or not, who knows? But you literally, coaching malpractice, you pulled the ball out of your hot quarterback's hands, and you told me you felt good about hot going in on the first two-point conversion, but it didn't work. This quarterback had thrown you back into it, giving you a chance. Why take it out of his hands? That's like sending somebody, throwing them off a boat in a dinghy and taking their engine or their oar away from them. They can't row. And there's a storm coming. Oh, the swells are 4 feet. Well, you ain't got a shot because we got nothing to help us. Why would you do this? Now, if you want to put a play in with the quarterback, you give him RPO, he pulls it out, tosses it, or hands it, and the guy throws one off a reverse pass, at least I'm giving you the quarterback with the ball in his hands. He's not Mahomes. He's not Josh Allen. But when you're hot, you don't ever take the ball. Well, why don't we pinch hit for Otani? Sean, are you comparing him to Otani? No, hear what I'm saying. Hot quarterback was feeling it. All of us have felt it at some point. I may not have felt it much, but we do. And you would have argued, said, no, run this play, we'll make it. Get him on the edge. Give him a run pass option. You put the ball in the hands of a guy who's never made the read in his life other than on the practice field, and that's what happens. And you saw the result. Kevin, it was coaching malpractice, and you've been the two-time coach of the year, and you're a hell of a football coach. Your front office, you've been dealt with some shit there in Cleveland, but now you've made the right decision. The quarterback's playing well. Why take it out of his hands? Why? Why not give him a chance? Coaching malpractice, it felt personal, even though I can't imagine. And if you're playing for the draft class of next year, I'm not sure you need a quarterback, whether it's him or somebody else. He's proven right now he's the guy. Why go? So you owe it to your team and franchise and fans to put the ball in the hands of the best player and let him see what he can do. Then I don't have a problem with the call, unless the guy's running fades out of the back of the end zone and can't throw it. You had minimal shot. And if you're on a two-point conversion and you're that team, the Titans, what are you telling your guys? Just like on a fake punt, be aware. We got a different body in there. Be aware of something out of the ordinary. So they're looking. You're not going to pursue as hard. You're going to hang back just like they did. They saw the guy come out, hung back on the throw, had no shot. And if you look back as a quarterback, you wouldn't throw that. You'd still be playing to the front side and try to throw something somewhere else. So you had a chance. And then he runs one way and throws back across his body that we're told as a quarterback never to do it. It's not the kid's fault. The coaching staff and the decision put him in a shitty-ass position, and they deserve to lose because of it. Let the quarterback make that decision. That's why you pay his ass, and that's why he's in there. And it was coaching malpractice, and it was just stupid by taking it out. It was just as dumb, when I go back, as good as Pete Carroll was. Why isn't Reggie Bush on the field on the final play against Texas? Even if you don't give it to him, motion him out or something, and then give it to Lendell White. Standing on the sidelines, you just shortened the damn bandwidth. And that's what they did for Cleveland. The fans deserve better after that comeback. And I know it's Tennessee, but still, that game right there, you should have given your quarterback a better chance to win it, and they didn't. And that is all on coaching. And then you can't be mad at the kid. What's he supposed to do? The kid on the sidelines, I'm standing over here, and you put somebody else in who's not used to throwing it. We worked on it in practice, and it worked. No shit, because it's on a scout card, and it's supposed to work. because you dial up a defense that isn't supposed to defend it. Look how far he's got to make this throw. Are you kidding me? Josh Allen, you wouldn't even put him in that situation, although he'd probably make it. You see my point, Sags. It just, I just don't understand. At least give me a chance on Saturdays and Sundays to win by a play call, and then I'll put the decision. If the guys can't make the decision, sit his ass over there by Gatorade and replace him. But we can't do that as easy with the coach, because decisions like that get coaches fired, period.
It definitely was eye-opening when you saw Shadur running off the field. And it's just another nail in the Kevin Stefanski coffin when it comes to
being even if you put Dylan Gabriel in,
yeah,
because you had some, maybe because he's more of a movement guy, at least right. The threat of it, or put them both on the field. Right. And then you got the opportunity, you got two quarterbacks throwing it. Remember when the was it the Chiefs? Who did the okie doke with the punter? Was it Kansas City, right? Wasn't yes. it Andy Reid who put the punter back there and it was a backup quarterback?
Yes.
Right? Third string quarterback, you still whatever it was the backup, sticking back there, takes a punt. And I think it wasn't it one of the sons or nephews of Hewards, and he rips yes. his quarterback and he rips it on the sideline for a completion. Now that's the ultimate okie doke. Give me something like that. I'm all in.
Right.
Not when this is the only play you got. Live or die with your best 11 on the field, and they did not do it. And it's malpractice. You just can't do that.
It's something we see in football way too much. It's coach and
cute doesn't win championships, just, and it doesn't yes, win games.
Right,
it just doesn't.
Right, it's good to have a play that they're not expecting in certain situations, but when it's 2-point conversion to tie the game in the last few seconds of the game. Give me my best 11 players on the field at that moment and call a play that sets them up for what they're doing the best in that moment. You know, if that drive
right, and they're feeling it,
moving them,
they're feeling it, right?
Yes, they're moving Shadur out of the pocket. Give me something else out of the pocket and call a play that you like best. So,
you know what I'd have done, Sage? And it's just to me,
stupid
fool. When we come over there to decide what we're doing. And if this happens with 9 minutes to go, okay, we got no chance to get a stop. Our right. defense is pretty damn good. We'll get the ball back. We go down, try it again. Kick a field goal to win by one as opposed to tie it and go to overtime. But, guy, I lost my train of thought about this
it's just stupidity.
Going. But you know what I've done? During that timeout between the kick and the touchdown and the kick, call him over. You know what Brian Billick always did with us, or Tom Moore, the great longtime mm-hmm. coach? You know what he did? North Turner, what do you like? The teams yeah. over there surround, bring them all over. What do you feel good about? I love this play. Coach, I can make it good. Go in and run it.
Right.
Good. Take your ass in there and run it. Go ahead. We've had plenty of coaches been talked out of plays that a quarterback felt good about. Remember, the guy with the headset ain't making one damn throw in the game. The right. guy on the field is. Find out how all 11 feel. Hell, I'll bet you the offensive line would have said, line up and run the bitch. We're running right. them right over in the end zone. Yes. So I don't know. While Cleveland's not much to talk about, Shadur earned it. He played good. And anybody that's criticizing his play for full, he put them in position to have a chance to yep. tie and then go on and win a game. And they took it right out of the Cleveland Browns' hands.
Yeah. He will be the starter the rest of the season. They do play good. The Chicago Bears next week. I believe that game's in Cleveland, if I remember right. Not 100% sure about
it. Keep making calls like that, it won't matter. He's going to get right. his brains beat in if he doesn't get things, if they don't give him a chance, especially in those situations. You took an opportunity to win right out of, you can't make those, you just can't do it, Sags. You can't,
yeah.
you got to start your best and play your best. And when you end the game, you got to do it just like you started. You put your 11 best out there to start it, right?
Right.
Didn't that what you think as a coach? I put my 11 best out here. And then you had your 10 best out there to lose it. You tell me what the right move is.
Right.
It's like buying low and selling lower as opposed to buy low, sell high.
Okay? Right.
And they yeah. did not do it.
Just doesn't make sense. All right, before we get out of here, as we always do, our bet of the day. Of course, we will do Monday Night Football. We have the Eagles on the road at the Chargers. The Eagles are a 2.5-point favorite with the line set at 41.5. So they're not expecting a ton of scoring in this game with a low line. But and the Eagles being on the road as the favorite. I don't know, Sean. I I'm liking the Chargers. I don't like what I see from Philadelphia right now. They are in this kind of trend of win four in a row, lose two. Win four in a row, lose two. And that's how they sit right now. But I just don't like what I've seen from them. Last Friday was when they played the Bears on Black Friday. They didn't look good in that game at all, kind of really at any point. Defensively, they're not flying around like they were early in the season. I'm taking the Chargers here. I think Justin Herbert can put up a little bit of points, and that defense can do just enough like Chicago did last week to, I think, hold this offense that is struggling down again. So give me – hell, I'll take the Chargers' money line in this game. I think the Chargers win this game outright.
Segs, I was about to say the same thing. But if you want to give me the points, I'll take them. But I think the Chargers are going to win the game. Until Philadelphia proves to me, or any of us, me, because I'm the one betting the game.
Yeah.
And I like the under, too, that they can put it back, to that their offense is explosive again. And if you take away one of the dimensions, which means Barkley and or Jalen Hurts' feet, you guys prove that you can go win this game. I'm not talking about last year's Super Bowl, because the Kansas City Chiefs were in last year's Super Bowl. They're not playing good. I'm talking about now. The Philadelphia Eagles, and not more than us, they got to prove to themselves they could travel across the country, show up, not only play physical, but make some finesse plays and get the running game, keep them one-dimensional. I like the Chargers on the money line as well, and I'll take the under. This is 27. Wait, what's the money line? 40? What is it?
41 and a half.
This to me is, hell, if they get down, get out of hand. But what, Sex? 23-16 type game?
I like 23-14, 23-13.
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
In those, right. Yeah. Yeah,
agree. I mean,
yeah, so maybe a 20
sub 40 points, but the Chargers went outright. Agree.
Yes, I'm right there with you. All right, tomorrow we'll get more into the college football playoff, the actual bracket and how it sets up. If we think they got the teams right in terms of the order that they are in and who they will play. I also want to talk about, why do we have to wait 2 weeks for these games? We should be pumping these out next weekend starting. But again, college football, whoever's making all these decisions, just continue to do stupid things. So we'll talk about that tomorrow, and then we'll get more into the NFL and what we saw yesterday and kind of start looking at playoff pictures. Maybe, you know, the Bears, we talked about, yeah, we think they'll get in, but hell, they're one loss next week to the Cleveland Browns, and the Detroit Lions win in their end. So,
didn't they go from the one seed to the seventh seed?
Yeah, one seed to the seventh seed.
With one loss, and it came on fourth down when you missed a play that you might have got a first down and had a shot.
The
just
NFC
like that.
Is loaded.
Brutal.
Right now. Brutal. And the Rams kind of redeemed themselves yesterday. We could talk about that. Matt Stafford showed back up and showed why, you know, maybe he is the leader in the MVP race along
guys
there with
should,
Drake
the guy's
May.
The MVP. The guy's the MVP and Drake May second. Stafford, considering, and he's coming off of all that in the back and all the thing in preseason. Segs, I also want to ask you the question, and we'll answer it and ask our great followers and listeners the same thing tomorrow. If they all play their best right now, who's the best team in the AFC? I'm not sure. And by the way, with all the shit we talked about, Joggers Boy and Santa Cruz Surfer and the kind of guy who probably knows how to mix a roll a spliff as good as he does get physicality on his team. I'm joking, having fun. Mike McDaniels has his team playing and has a chance to get in the playoffs. But I still think they're a stick and move team. I don't think there's any physicality, but with all the crap we've given them, let's give him a little love because they're playing pretty good football and the sunshine looks good on them. I just don't think there's enough tough grit for them to survive it in January, but credit to the way they're playing, Sakes.
If the Miami Dolphins make the playoffs, just scrap the AFC this year. Just scrap it. It's gone. We're not doing the playoffs. The NFC is
Dolphins
playoffs.
Go. Colts miss. Everybody's out.
Everybody's
Baltimore
out.
Misses. Burrow leads them, but they can't quite get in. Yeah.
Kansas City's out. Like, just scrap the AFC. But yeah, we'll talk
but
about
curious,
that.
I'm curious because I don't know well who it is. Tomorrow. I do in my mind, say, but if they all play their best, do you have an unequivocal favorite? I don't.
No,
but
I don't.
We'll discuss
either.
That tomorrow.
And then also, one more Notre Dame topic tomorrow. Something that will happen next year for them. That's where I'll leave it there, but it has to do with the college football playoff. Well, no, not even that. We can discuss that as well because I kind of forgot about that. Yeah, could they be looking for a new head coach? next
only
year
because he wants to leave and go coach pro football, not because they're going to fire his ass. He's too good.
Exactly. So we'll talk about all that tomorrow. We got a ton to talk about. It's football season. We're getting towards the end of football season, and that's when things really,
Tell all your peeps to subscribe and like, because we're going to bring it every day like this, no matter what the subject is.
Go to YouTube.
Season, off season, every day. Yep.
Like and subscribe at Unpaved Sean Salisbury. We'll be back tomorrow. Coach JB will join us Wednesday, hopefully.
Yeah, he had an appointment he couldn't get out of. Yeah, he had to shorten his show this morning, too. But we'll get JB on at some point this week. We'll get him on.
Yes, he will join us sometime this week to talk about everything we talked about today and talk moving forward. We'll be back tomorrow. Again, 1 p.m. Eastern, noon Central, as we are every single day during the week. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Peace.
Unpaved Sean Salisbury here for bringing authentic, real stuff to you. Hardcore opinion.
Sean Salisbury, a great NFL analyst, a former NFL quarterback.